very well thought of. He pulled everybody out of mud holes. We had gumbo soil, which when it rained, okay, when there's so much certain soil and it rained, it would ball up on the wheels of your vehicles and push your fenders off if you went very far. It would even push the fenders off of tractors. It would ball up on the wheels. So I, we couldn't, going to town, I was 6.5 miles out of town. So when we were going to town, there was this famous mud hole outside of Mrs. Olson's. It dipped down and made this town. And when you got that far, there was all the vehicles in the ditch at the side and everything. Because people, you walked to town from there. You couldn't go any further because there's bad mud. Well, when I was having my oldest daughter, Beverly, I had her in May. So April is mud season. See, when the snow is going and everything, that is mud season. The end of March, April and May. So when we got to Mrs. Olson's, I used to have to get out of the car and walk. There I was, 8 months pregnant. Talking about 8 months being pregnant and barefoot, I'm never pregnant and barefoot. So I tried at first to walk in my boots. But you couldn't walk in your boots because gradually your boots would fill up all this mud and your foot would come out of your boot and leave your boot in the mud, if you know what I mean. Your feet would come out. So I used to carry my boots and walk to town barefoot. Then when I got to the doctor's office, you see, you know everybody in this small place, and they would, Beryl would have this bowl of water ready for me to wash my feet so as I could perfectly wash my feet before I saw the doctor. And,
so how long did you have to walk barefoot?
Well, I walked the last mile.
An entire mile barefoot?
Yeah.
And 8 months pregnant?
And 8 months pregnant. Barefoot and pregnant. Anyway, and then I would have it, and then... anyway, when I had Beverly, I almost died. I was in labor for 2 whole days, 36 hours or more. The head wouldn't turn around to come around, and I hemorrhaged. I didn't know my husband for 2 days. I didn't know anything for 2 days. I was in very bad shape. I almost died. If the doctor's wife hadn't been there to knead my stomach and get my things all stopped. I'm a bleeder anyway. But so I was in hospital for 16 days before I went home. Then when I was going to have Linda, which was only 18 months later, Ken figured that it would be better if I went to Edmonton and everything because of what had happened. So I went to Edmonton and stayed with a friend and everything for 3 weeks, I think it was, 3 weeks or more. And it still, we went to the doctor and he said it still wasn't ready to come yet. So Ken brought me back to Mayflower and then I had to go in the next day. And so this doctor that was there at that time in our small hospital, I was going to be his first baby, his first maternity. So anyway, he didn't know what to do, and Ken and he would stand and discuss this. So finally, when I went in and was gone, they were very, very worried and didn't know whether to take me to Edmonton. But anyway, things didn't go too badly at all. And I was right. Well, Dr. Clarkson and Ken used to stand outside the nursery window, and the nurses used to say, "You wouldn't know which one was the father, would you?" There was Clarkson with his chest out and his head all big because he delivered this baby that was going to be a problem, etc., etc., and all that thing. And Ken would be there because everything had gone smoothly this time. And they used to stand outside the nursery window and just glow. But everything went well that time, so.
And how many children did you have?
Five.
Five children.
Yes.
And when was your first child born? What year?
49. I was married in 48 and 49. I came off in 47. But anyway, I had 3 children in 5 years, and then waited 5 years and had another one, and then waited another 5 years and had Kevin. So that I was making school lunches for 28 years. How about that? So I was. I used to make my own bread. I learned how to make bread, and I made 6 loaves of bread, 2 pounds of buns, and 2 pounds of cinnamon buns 3 times a week. And somebody once asked me at the Legion, "Well, what do you do with your stale bread?" I said, "My bread very seldom gets cool, let alone stale." Just as I was taking my bread out of the oven, it was the school bus came, you see, and dropped the children off. Well, there's all this new bread smell and everything. They'd eat some right away then, and everybody vied for the crusts at the end, you know. They had some then, and they had some buns, and they had some cinnamon buns. Then I made the lunch. They had supper as well, which cinnamon buns all gone. And then I made lunches, you see, in the morning time. So there was only 2 days, and then it was all gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
You just mentioned that you came over in 1947. Can you describe coming over to Canada for me?
Well, I flew over because we decided that that would be the better way rather than on the thing to do all this arranging. And so I flew, and I flew into Shannon Airport, and they gave us a meal. I'll tell you about the meal. And I sat at the end of the table, and these people brought me this great big piece of meat on a plate, and I asked them if they wanted me to serve, because I'd never seen that much meat in all my life, because I'd been young up until the food rationing, and then food rationing, you got 4 ounces per person per week. So I have never seen this big piece of meat, and I thought they wanted me to serve it, and they said no, it was mine. But of course I couldn't eat it all anyway. And then I flew from Shannon to Newfoundland, I forgot the name of the place, and then to Montreal. And then went across Canada on the train, took 5 days. And I couldn't eat 3 meals a day because my stomach had shrunk. So I would just eat breakfast and supper, or lunch, breakfast and lunch, or whatever. I couldn't eat 3 meals a day. And my Canadian mum, when I came here, thought I didn't like her cooking. So she was going to feed this starving English girl, and I couldn't eat it. She thought I was insulting her cooking. But anyway, I gradually began to eat a little more and a little more and a little more.
So that was because of the rationing.
Because
the
rationing in England,
yeah,
is very small, and your stomach shrinks. And anyway, we enjoyed anything that we got that was so very different here. They had butter here, and cheese, and meat, and bananas. We hadn't seen bananas. If bananas came to England during the war, they were on children's ration books. Oranges and bananas were only on children's ration books. So
did you have to go through any rationing in Canada?
No.
No, there was no rationing.
Well, not what we thought anyway. I mean, you got lots of everything. Everybody got lots of everything here. It looked lots, whether they were short or not, I don't know. But you know, it just looked, they had lots of everything. So we never noticed it.
So when you arrived in Canada, how long had it been since you last saw your husband?
Oh, a few months. Oh, it must have been six months, maybe. 6 or 8, I can't remember. It's a long time back, you know. And of course I've had a house fire since then, and I've lost children since then, so I don't think of it at all.
Yeah.
So,
could you describe your wedding to me? You got married in Canada, unlike the other war brides who got married in
England. Some of them didn't have any rations. They just had little short dresses or whatever, just had got a new dress on, you saved up your coupons and got a dress and everything. I made mine here. And because I taught myself to sew. I make all my own clothes.
Yeah.
And I didn't show you. I'll show you this thing. I've made my family this year for Christmas pyjamas and nighties and things for Christmas presents, because they like what I do. And But here, everything was just so much. It really was much. Okay. Including the mud.
Yeah. How did you decide to move to Canada?
Because Ken was Canadian.
So there wasn't really an option, you just decided to move because he was...
You know, this is another thing that Marge can't fathom. That to leave, to all of a sudden, this man would ask you to come to this strange country and you would leave all your family, everything behind. Have no one that you know here apart from him.
And Marge is the friend that you walk with, right?
Yes, I walk for Marge with her every morning. And she figures that is way out for a man to just leave a whole family behind and your country and everything you know. And you don't even know where you're going, if you know what I mean. You have no idea of what you are coming to. Just to this man.
And how did your family feel about that? How did they feel about losing you?
Well, they figured that if that's what I wanted, and I had already been away from home in the forces for 4 years, so it wasn't like I was leaving my home the next to go, you know, right away, because I'd already been in the forces, which is away from home, actually.
Yeah, and how did your family feel about your husband in general? Did they approve of him?
Oh, yes, very, very much so. Everybody loved him. Ken had the biggest funeral that Mayerthorpe had ever had before this RCMP thing.
Really?
Well, he was president of all those things. He pulled everybody out of Mayerthorpe. He did anything for anyone, and he was an extremely good mechanic. Our yard was always full of vehicles being fixed.
Mm.
He fixed anybody's vehicles, tractors, trucks, cars, whatever. He was a good mechanic. And our yard was always there. Is it met in his area?
And how did your how did the people in the community feel about you marrying a Canadian? What was the general feeling about Canadians at the time period?
At home
during the war.
Well, everybody loved Canadians. They were really, really great guys and very, very friendly. I don't think I ever met an obnoxious one. I don't think I ever met an obnoxious Canadian. They were helpful. They fitted in with us very, very well. And they had come to do a job. Myself, I didn't know any of the Army ones. I was associated mostly with the Air Force. I didn't know any Navy, Canadians in the Navy either. I mean, you're just in your own. So, I mean, I can't vouch for everybody, but anyone that I met were wonderful.
And that was in comparison to the Americans?
Yeah, I don't like the Americans. They were bombastic. They thought they could buy us. They thought they had won the war for us and had that attitude with them that they, I don't know whether they thought they were smarter or better or what. It was an attitude that you could feel, because they thought they could come over and just buy us, including us females. They'd just show us money, we'd do anything. Fall flat at their feet, etc. Not likely, especially me.
Were there women that fell for the Americans?
I have no idea. Yes, they married Americans, yes.
But you didn't know any person?
Just one girlie. Just one. So I really can't speak about that. I really can't tell you about that, because I really don't know. I just stayed with my Canadians.
So you arrived in 1947 and then started having children fairly soon in 1948?
Yes.
And we talked a little bit about the changes that you went through from Britain to Canada. Would you say Canada was what you expected? I know you knew a little bit about Canadians, but what was it? What did you expect?
The immensity of Canada. In England you can go anywhere in England in so many hours, okay, it took maybe 24 months. Sometimes I get from the south of England posted to Scotland, and that took quite a while. But here I was 5 days on the train, and going across the prairies, etc. So much space with nothing in it, etc. It was the vastness of the country, and definitely the changes in climate. I have never seen that much snow. I've never shoveled that much snow in all my life.
So when you arrived, you went straight to America?
No, I went to Prince George first.
Prince George first.
And was there, and then we went on our honeymoon to Jasper. And I thought that was gorgeous, absolutely wonderful. We got bicycles and went all over in Jasper. And then went to America.
And could you describe your first home for me?
It was a granary with a lean-to on it.
Really?
It really was. This man had been living on this farm, and it was a granary with a lean-to on it. Now, he kept the grain in the granary, and the lean-to was where he lived. Okay, so that at one end of the lean-to, he had kept a calf and a pig, I think, and something else. Anyway, the neighbours, and I didn't know this at first, you know, the neighbours told me this. So that when Steve Polyblank, our neighbour south, and Mary, the one that helped me with the thrashing crew, when Steve came was a great big man, okay, he was 6 feet and he was big. So we were sitting around my table thing here, and his chair went through the floor that he was sitting on, went through the floor. And it was a piece, I didn't know this, the linoleum had been put over this, and it is where he'd had these animals, and it had rotted underneath, you see. It gradually rotted from where the animal had done its thing and all that jazz. And the floor was all rotten underneath, and I didn't know this. So that Steve's chair just went down, and we didn't realize this, and then Ken went down to see in the cellar. It was all this rotten floor. So we had to redo the floor, but we learnt all this, you see.
So how long were you in Prince George for then?
Oh, I was only there while I was getting ready to get married.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that was just while I was getting ready, just sewing my dress and got ready to go to Jasper.
Yeah.
And then to the farm. And we stopped off in Edmonton and we bought a bed and a table of 4 chairs and a couch.
And can you describe your home in Mayfair for me?
Well, that was my first home. I leaned to the granary.
That was it? I thought that was the one in Prince George.
Oh, no, this is my farmhouse.
So how long did you live there for?
Well, I lived there. We did the floor, and we added on to that. I can't remember how. I think it was about 10 years we added on to it. And that's my house that burned.
Oh.
Everything burned to the ground in February 1962. We couldn't save anything. And I had the 3 children going to school. Marie wasn't going to school yet, 5 years later. She was 2. And the school bus went by our place half a mile south to pick up the Mars kids and then came back. Well, when they saw my house all burning, the children got off the school bus and they were all inside my house throwing things out of the windows. They'd broken the windows and were throwing stuff out onto the snow. You know, and you just slid on the snow. And gradually, you see, the outside is all wood. It's all siding, you know. And inside is plasterboard. Well, you know the cracks down the plasterboard. I could see the flames all burning this wood on the outside, and you could see the flames going down the joints of the plasterboard, and all of a sudden I could see it all falling in. And so I stood in the middle of the floor and I said, get all these children out of here, I won't know who's in and who's out because I don't know them and everything. And somebody said, take her out. So two big guys come and took me by the elbows and took me outside, and I only had a little short hat on. Anyway, the fire had started in, it was insulated with shavings in the ceiling, with shavings this man had done. And when we had put it was a brick chimney, and it'd been from the frost changing, the frost heaves things, you know, and made a crack in the chimney, and a spark had gone from the crack in the chimney into these shavings. And it was burning around the chimney and the roof, and I didn't know. I was getting children's lunches, getting them ready for school. You couldn't see anything in the house. And Ken came up from the barn, from milking. He had two cows. And he came up, and he took, I'd just fetched a pail of water, and he took my pail of water and threw it up at the ceiling, around my stove, you see, where the heater was. And he just took it. And he said, try and get it on the phone. We'd just got the phone installed. We'd had it 3 months. And the wire went in there, in the ceiling. And he said, get on the phone and do one long, 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 long ring. And that's the emergency ring, you see. Everybody picks it up. It's on a party line. Everybody picks it up. And they said, just say, fire at Taylor's. And I just said it, and then I couldn't have phoned anymore because the fire had reached the phone line. It burned it. And the people that could get their vehicles started came, because it's 40 below. So some of them can't get their vehicles going right away, but the ones that could came later. But there's all these children in this school bus. Then I couldn't find my Marie, my two-year-old. I couldn't find her anywhere. And so I looked around and I said, where did Marie go? And somebody said, well, they put the snowsuit on her and they've taken her on the school bus. So I said, oh my goodness, and everything. So where they'd gone down to Marzick's, they dropped her off the school bus. They stopped the school bus to get all these other kids on and dropped my Marie off. And we went to a neighbor lady's the rest of the day and everything. So then, Patrick's let us have their house for a few months, and we didn't have any insurance or anything, you know, we just lost everything. And Ken heard about this old house, or this old building just off the highway. So he inquired about it, and they said we could have it for so much. So then he showed me, I learned how to build forms for a basement and how to wire them. I learned how to pour cement for the basement. I learned how to, they brought this old building there and they put that on. I learned how to do plasterboard. Ken put up plasterboard in this thing. And somebody told us that when we took the old shingles off, we would find that written on the roof it says restaurant, cafe and restaurant, which it did. And we did all that, and then we had built the basement that Ken showed me twice as long, because we were going to build onto this building and everything. But the winter came before we got done, so we had half the basement still open for the winter. So Ken put boards on there.
So we were just talking
about the fire. We had done what I said. We had done the basement twice as long because we were going to build on, you see, to this. Well, we didn't get it done because the winter came, and that end was open all winter, and the water would freeze on the floor if you dropped any on, spilled any. I couldn't wash the floor all winter because it would freeze. And the children had to sleep in their snowsuits because it was too cold in there. You could see your breath in the house all winter.
So we've talked quite a bit about the different hardships that you have to go through living in Canada. I've heard of war brides that left after a short
time. Yes, yeah. I did too.
Did you know any of those women?
Just one lady. She came from Scotland and everything, and she went back home. I wouldn't have left Ken for anything and all that. But with the hardships, somebody could have persuaded me if Ken hadn't been who he was, if Ken hadn't been the man he was, yes, I could have left.
So things got really hard and...
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So you could understand why some of the were
right. Yes, very much so. And I heard that some of them had married Indians, native Indians, and came and they couldn't be accepted onto the reservoir, reserves, and everything, and they didn't know that. And also I heard that two or three wives in Ontario, the men were already married when they came, which made it very difficult.
Yes.
They were already married and had married again, so they didn't come. That was sad.
Yeah. That would be very sad. I wonder how common that was.
I've no idea, love.
Yeah.
I just heard that it had happened.
So after you came to Canada, when was the first time you saw your family again?
Not until after Ken was killed. Ken would never, never, ever fly again. Never.
Really?
With his three bad crashes. He'd been in three very, very bad crashes. And they'd lost some of the crew each time, and he'd been hurt. But I have this caterpillar for a night job too. If you bail out and your parachute saves your life, you get a caterpillar. Green, little green eyes for a day job, and red eyes for a night job. I've got his caterpillar. Mm-hmm. And so he had, and he said that they always feared when they bailed out, they didn't know where they were, that he would not be over the water, because very often if they came down in the ocean they were never found. Okay, you could find a man in the ocean. So he said he was praying all the way down on his parachute that he wasn't over water. He says the ground came up and hit him so very, very hard but he was thankful. And then he said he didn't know there was any areas big enough in England that you couldn't find the rest of the crew. All night they had a whistle on their top button, you know. They had a compass on their top button, on their batteries, and a whistle. And the whistle is to find each other when they came down. They blew it and blew it and blew it. And he says it took them about 4 hours to find each other and everything. He says he didn't think there was anywhere big enough in England that they could let lost that bad.
So did you ever go back to
England? I didn't go until after Ken was killed, which was over 30 years. I haven't been back for 30 years, and I was very, very surprised at the motorways and at a lot of things that have changed in England.
Mm. Did you feel a connection to it as a home, or did you
No. My mother had died. I went back with Betty, with my friend Betty, and we stayed with some of her relatives and things like that. I didn't have anybody there of my own family at all.
Because all of your siblings had already moved?
Yes.
And where were they living at that time?
New Zealand and Australia. My oldest brother was in New Zealand, my youngest brother was in Australia. And my sister was in New Zealand. And I have a sister here in Chilliwack.
So I guess you going home to England was more just going to another place.
And Betty had been there a little while when she said to come, and she had a little car, and she took me over the different parts of England where I had been in the forces. She took me to the different camps I had been on, and to where I'd been on a barrage balloon in Scotland, and things like that. It was very, very interesting, very nice.
Did you remember a lot of the things when you went back and saw them?
They were different. Some of the old air drones, farmers had taken them over. The runways were all cracked and grass growing in between them. The hangars and everything were used as barns, their hay storage and things like that. It was different.
Mm-hmm. And going back to England, did that make you feel more Canadian? Or did it make
Yes. My friend Betty, she is still homesick for England. Very, very, very much so. when her husband was alive and everything, she used to go back to England for 6 months at a time. She even went one time for 2 years and left Harvey here and went to England because she had belonged to a very big family, and she was still homesick. Her husband used to let her go.
But you didn't feel that way?
No.
You felt a connection to Canada?
Oh, yes. Ken had done that. I felt very Canadian. Ken. Mm. He had helped me settle.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that Ken died when he was 47.
Yes. He was welding on his truck on the farm and it exploded in the yard.